Good morning. Really good to be here with you, and hope that our time together will be profitable. I guess it was a singular. No. Turn with me to John 13, if you will, please. And that's our text for our Bible study. What has Jesus prepared these people to do in this particular setting? What has he asked them to do? Has anybody read the text and you know what's going on?
Well, he's preparing them for his departure, is he not?
He is. And especially when you get into chapter... Well, really this whole context is for that. You're right. Chapter 14, it talks a little bit more specifically about that. But verse 1 tells us that it was before the feast of Passover, and Jesus knew that his hour had come, that he should depart from this world to be with the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. Prior to this, he sent them out to prepare for the Feast of Passover. He wants to keep, he's looked forward to keeping this supper with them. And the other accounts will give you that record, like in Mark 14, for example, and Luke 22. But he sent them into the city. And what were they to do in the city in preparation for this Feast of the Passover, this Last Supper? Sent them into the city, and what were they to do?
They're
going to meet a man.
And tell him that the Lord had need of his help.
Right. Isn't that interesting? You're going to meet this man, and you just tell him that the Lord has need of his house, and he'll help you get everything set up. So, and here's the Feast of Passover now. You know, and the Passover involved a meal together, but it involved also a lamb having been prepared and eating that meat, and as we well know, the unleavened bread that was on the table too. But he sends them to make these preparations for everybody, and there's one thing there's one thing that in this text we find they did not prepare for. Anybody know what that is? One thing. Yes.
To be humble.
And specifically?
Wash feet.
Wash feet. I'm sorry?
To be servants.
Right. Right. There was one thing. That's the one lesson I want us to get out of this text this morning, if we don't get anything else. This is the Lord's kingdom he's talking about. These are the Lord's people. And he sends them to make preparation, and there's one thing they fail to prepare for. Not one of them made the preparation. He only sent two, I believe, Peter and John. But as you read the other accounts, but not one of them, not one of the 12 even volunteered to take care of this one very important part of their being together.
Was that typically done by the household owner?
Typically. Typically, or he would have somebody designated to do that. Yes. That's the setting. I want you to see that, and I want us to keep going back to that point and seeing how that is so appropriate in the lesson that Jesus is teaching here. Byron and I were talking about on the way over here this morning how we consider Jesus to be the great master teacher and preacher, and you have to look long and hard to find any setting where Jesus might have been preaching, as we call it. I mean, the longest thing that I know is in the Sermon on the Mount, we call it. And you can read that thing in 15, 17 minutes, something like that. Now, it might have taken longer for him to deliver it. I don't know. But it's the longest continuing setting for teaching that there is in Jesus' life. Jesus was one to teach. He was one to spur questions and spur their minds to meditate and think about things. Think them through to a logical deduction. You know, that's what he wanted. And that's what he's doing here. He seizes this moment to keep the Feast of the Passover with his disciples. And he has one, I'm convinced, in retrospect, he has one mission in mind. He wants them to see the nature of his people in his kingdom. He wants them to see what he's all about and what we need to be about. So keep that in mind as we read through this and see if that doesn't come to the surface as we read. Verse 2, supper being ended, the devil having already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him. Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going to God, rose from supper, laid aside his garments. Can you picture this? He rose from supper. They're lying on the floor. That's the setting. That's typical of what they were doing. They were lying on the floor, probably on their sides, around a table. And so their feet were out away from the table. If you can kind of picture that. Let me see. Where's my chalk? Let's say that the table were rectangle. I don't know what it was. But they were lying on the floor, around the table, with their feet out away from the table. And Jesus rises from the table to his feet, and he takes off what we would say, you know, can take off his jacket and lay it down. And he girds himself with a towel, takes a basin of water, and he proceeds to go around the table washing feet. Can you picture being in the position of any one of these disciples and Jesus getting up and doing that? Can you visualize what you might have been thinking had you not prepared for the washing of feet? What would you think? I want you to think about that as we read this story. He poured water into a basin, began to wash the disciples' feet, and to wipe them with a towel with which he was girded. He'd taken this towel and wrapped it around himself. And then he uses that to wipe their feet after he's washed their feet. What was the reason for washing feet? Let me ask you that.
They were dirty.
They didn't wear nice shoes like I have on.
They were wearing sandals.
That's right. And it was a very dusty, dirty climate. Their feet would get dirty with those sandals. And so it would just... It's a little bit like somebody coming to your house and you inviting them in and saying, well, have a cup of coffee with me, or have a glass of water. it's just a common courtesy that was expected. Well, nobody had prepared for that. And so Jesus now sets out to teach his disciples very humbly, teach his disciples a lesson in humility. None of them, if they had thought about it, none of them had prepared for it. I can't for the life of me think that none of these disciples thought of this. I can't think of that. That just doesn't cross my mind at all. What was the one thing that disciples argue about so much throughout Jesus' ministry? One thing that just comes to the top so many.
Who's the greatest?
Who's going to be the greatest? And remember that at one point the mother of two of his apostles came and requested what?
That they get it sit on his...
Yeah. Lord, would you let one of my sons sit on your left and the other on your right? And you remember the response of the other disciples? They were just, they couldn't believe it. They were just angered. The audacity. and these guys let her ask that question. Well, underlying that anger, they were all thinking the same thing. I'm hoping I can sit on the Lord's right hand or left hand. You know, it's today in our society, we're climbing the ladder of success, aren't we? You know, I'm down here, but I'm going to be on that next rung next time, and then I'll be on the next rung, and all those people under me, and I'll finally be on the top rung, you know. And Jesus teaches us a lesson that's not supposed to be in my kingdom. Well, with that mentality, with that attitude, none of these apostles have made the preparations for being a servant. And isn't that a problem that we have today? None of us want to serve. None of us want to be that humble. We'll be humble, but not that humble. That's just asking a little bit too much, you know? So here they are, all of them lying on the floor, and Jesus goes around to wash their feet. And notice what happens. Peter says in verse 6, "Lord, are you washing my feet?" Can you imagine being in Peter's shoes? I didn't intend the pun there, but can you imagine being on the floor there and the Lord approaches you? How would you respond? What would be going through your mind?
That I wasn't worthy of it.
Yeah, right.
I'd be washing hands.
right. But the fact of the matter is, not one of them had planned for this. So the Lord's trying to teach him a lesson. It's his final lesson before he's crucified. This is the night before. Anyway, Jesus said to him, "What I am doing to you, you do not understand now, but you will know after this." And Peter said, "You shall never wash my feet." Peter is just so, yeah, he doesn't hold anything back. Whatever is on his mind, he just blurts it out. And it's not to say the rest of them didn't have the same thoughts. They probably did, you know. And if I'd been lying there on the floor, I'd probably had the same thoughts too. But I probably wouldn't have said anything like Peter did. Peter just blurts it out. And Jesus says to him, "If I do not wash you, you have no part with me." So Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head." What do you see in Peter's response there in verse 9?
He was humbled and he wanted to be holy clean. He realized that he wasn't clean.
Yeah.
Well, he realized it. He was about to be cut off.
That's right. That's right.
That was something that was totally unacceptable.
Right.
So he dropped his pride real fast.
But Jesus' response is, "He who is bathed needs only to wash his feet." What's he mean by that? He who is bathed, I'm reading New King James Version. He who is bathed needs only to wash his feet. He's completely clean, but you are clean, but not all of you. What's he trying to say to Peter? Definitely, one is going to betray me.
Saying that there's one thing that they need to fix. They're doing everything right except for one thing.
Mm-hmm. I think that's definitely a part of it too. Yes. You seem to have everything else in line, but there's just one thing lacking right here. You need to learn. Isn't he contrasting taking a physical bath with something else?
Ultimately, Jesus is the only one who can humble himself to cleanse mankind.
Okay, good, good. There's a spiritual cleansing here that Jesus wants them to see, in contrast with what they're thinking about. They're thinking about taking a bath, you know, physical bath. But there's a spiritual cleansing here. There's an attitude of heart that's just not present in everybody. And it was one attitude about being humble that wasn't in any of them. But one in particular is unclean. His heart is not right at all. Jesus knows he's going to be betrayed by him. But Jesus wants them to see. Well, let me ask you, what is it Jesus wants them to see? Yes, humility. Yes.
Yes, being cleansed in Jesus Christ.
Yes, definitely. The heart is what Jesus is talking to them about. He stressed that over and over throughout his ministry with them. And they still are having difficulty grabbing hold of that. They think physical. They think he's going to be sitting on a throne. And one was going to be his left and one on his right. You know, there's going to be people that, you know, serving him like a physical king. That's all they could think about. They can't think spiritually. And Jesus has been driving home these points, just hammering away at them. Patiently, carefully, humbly, hammering away at them, trying to help them see, my kingdom is not of this world. If it were of this world, what would happen?
My people would fight
for me. It's not of this world. It's not a physical kingdom. You've got the wrong concept. Think spiritual. And they're still not getting it. Okay? So he's contrasting there, wanting to think about the word clean from a spiritual standpoint, as our brother was suggesting. Now look at verse 11. For he knew who would betray him. Therefore he said, you are not all clean. John helps us understand that. So when he had washed their feet, taken his garments, and sat down again, he said to them, do you know what I have done to you? That would be a pretty probing question, wouldn't it? Picture yourself lying on the floor there and he's come around and washed your feet. Wouldn't that be a probing question? Do you know what I've done to you? What was he wanting them to see? What was he wanting them to understand?
The servant attitude?
I'm sorry?
The servant attitude?
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm.
I think he showed them too. He showed them too that no earthly king would do what he did.
That's right.
Not the kind of king that they were still thinking
about. This is what my kingdom is all about. This is what my kingdom is all about. You all missed it. He didn't say it that way, but he might as well have. You all missed what my kingdom is about. You didn't prepare. Not one of you got up and offered to be a servant to everybody else. Not one of you. All of you. Every single one of you has been arguing, I want to be top dog. I want to climb that ladder. Not one had offered to be humble. He said, that's what my kingdom is about. Humility. Service.
Well, it's still like Ralph said a while ago, I think, or you said that they expected to be served, to be waited on.
Yes.
Well, they expected.
That's exactly right.
Not by a servant or someone designated.
That's right. So then he continues and he says, you call me teacher and Lord, and you say, well, for so I am. So he admits their concept of who he was. That's true. I am your Lord and Master. I am a teacher. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. If I've humbled myself to wash your feet, then the lesson for you is, you need to do the same thing. If I'm your leader, and you're going to be my disciple, you need to follow in my steps. You need to follow my example. I have given you an example that you should do as I have done to you. Most surely I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is he who is sent greater than he who sent him. I want you to think about something. Here's Jesus now. And we know him as the disciples have agreed. He's Lord. He's Master. They recognized he was going to be king. But think about, in a more complete sense, who was Jesus?
He was Son of God.
Son of God. Okay. I want to tell you, I only know of three, I don't know how else to call them, beings. God, angels, and men. You might know something else I don't know. But that's all I know of in the Scriptures. And Jesus is God. He came to earth, and we're going to talk about that in our lesson this morning. He came to earth in the form of a man. So just think about this now. He came down to be a man. And he was. In the very true and most complete sense of the word, he was man. He suffered just like you and I do. Somebody hit his thumb. If he'd hit his thumb while he was doing carpenter work, it hurt him just like it does me. He was a man. Perfectly, completely a man. But in addition to that, he was also God. Perfectly and completely. He didn't stop at being an angel. He came down to be a man. But now what did he do after he became a man? And this is the final lesson he wants these disciples to see. While he's incarnate, while he is a man, I want you to see he became a servant of man. Humbled himself even further than just being a man. I mean, there's no glory in being a man. No glory at all. In being God, all glorious. Completely glorious. But in addition to being God, he came down to be a man. No glory there. But now he becomes a servant of men. No glory in that either.
Well, the verse says, nor is he who sent his sent greater than he who sent him.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So he's putting himself below God. Mm-hmm. Time.
He is.
That's what he's telling his disciples.
Because there's a lesson there, isn't there? There's an important lesson that he wants his disciples and he wants us to learn. We need to wrap our minds around this. What it is he wants his people to be. And it's all about who he is. It's all about who he is. He's a servant of men. I'm sorry.
These same people that Jesus is addressing here, their forefathers demanded that they should have kings, like
right.
This is the people use their rulers as their example, and these self-inflated kings justify the smallest person demanding to the left and right hand.
You're right.
What Jesus is saying is acknowledging, I am your teacher, that is, I am your ruler, and I also worship thee.
Right, right.
So that's the example.
It is.
And that's hard. People, it's difficult to accept that.
It is.
You need to be humble as your ruler.
We just don't live in a society like that. So this is against everything that we as Americans know. It's against it. But being a servant of Christ is against everything that any man knows. There's very few people who want to humble themselves that much. But that's what being a Christian, being a disciple is all about. It's a point of humility. I can't do this. It's not in me. It's not in man that walks to direct his own steps. It's not in man. So to humble myself, to be a servant, not only to my Lord, but a servant to all of my fellow men, all of them. Now, stop and think about this with that thought in mind. What is it that Jesus knew before he went over to this table and started washing feet? What is it that he knew that they did not know?
One will betray
me.
And that he was going to die shortly.
He was going to die? Yes.
Peter was going to deny him.
Now you stop and think about that. One of these, I'm just going to mark one of them and say this was Judas here. Would you say that's Judas? And this is Peter over here. He starts with Peter and he goes around the table. Peter's going to deny him. And Judas is an absolute enemy. I mean, you don't make any bones about that. He's going to do everything he can to see that Jesus dies. And yet Jesus, without any of them knowing this, Jesus knew it. And he goes around and washes all their feet. There's the lesson that we're talking about. There's the humility of serving not just people I like, not just people who like me, not just people who are in the kingdom with me, serving somebody that's going to do me in. Let that really sink in. Yes.
I mean, that's a great lesson, because that attitude has to be part of your makeup, you know, 100% of the time.
Yes.
In all things that we do.
That's right.
Even if you're in a position of leadership.
Yes.
You keep that certain attitude, it helps you to make the right decisions.
Mm-hmm. Very good point.
I wonder how many of us, if we knew a person's heart, would do that very thing. If we knew there's somebody there that would do us harm, would we still treat them the same way if we knew their heart?
Let me tell you.
If God knew the heart of Judas already, Jesus knew.
It's a great question. Go ahead.
Well, we tend to use the excuse, well, we'll just kick the sand off our feet and have it done.
I have begun driving charter bus this summer. I don't have a lot of runs yet, but I had one that was, I mean, if I don't have anything else the rest of the summer, I've learned a valuable lesson. I took a bunch of, there were two busloads of us, but took a bunch of kids to a Holocaust museum in Terre Haute, Indiana. I didn't even know it existed. This twin survived the Holocaust, survived Hitler's experimentation on her and her sister, her twin. She was supposed to have died. She was supposed to have died. And she survived. Had she died, her twin would have been killed immediately. And they went through just unbelievable stuff with this experimentation. They were stripped naked every day, and every every dimension of their body was measured and recorded, experimented with. See how one was responding with the injections and how the other one that wasn't receiving the injections was responding, comparing everything. Had this one with the injections died, she told this very vividly. Had she died, her sister would have been killed, and they would have experimented even more thoroughly on their dead bodies. She survived. And she's convinced the Lord let her live because she was determined not to die. She was determined to survive that and tell the story that she does later, you know. She was 10 years old. 10 years old. But she tells this story. And then she went, you talk about forgiving. You know, people ask her, how can you have a good attitude toward these people that treated you this way? She knew the man who stood outside the gas chambers and watched till everybody was dead, and then he watched through a peephole, and when everybody was dead, he was the one that gave the word, a German officer. And they'd go in and remove all the bodies and run some more people in there. She went and met with this man. He was just in disbelief that she would even want to meet with him, because he knew who she was. He knew she had been a part of the experiments and she had survived. But he was very humbled by that. And her point is that she had forgiven him, even though he may have been responsible for the death of her parents and many of her friends, if not all of them. She had forgiven him. And she could talk to him. And she could tell him, I've forgiven you. And he's written a statement now, at her insistence, you know, apologizing for his participation in that, because he is sorry for it. But nobody's ever approached him that way. Nobody had ever expressed forgiveness. And he's written a statement explaining that, explaining his participation. You know, there's a lot of people just believe the Holocaust never happened. This statement's available from a man who lives right now, who was very much involved. Forgiveness is a very important part of who we need to be as a part of the kingdom. And it takes humility, lots of humility, to bring ourselves to forgive those like these two men. I'm convinced that Jesus, before he got up from the table, Jesus as a man had already forgiven these two men. As a man. Not as God. Not as God, but as a man. He had forgiven them. So he could go around to any of his enemies and hope that maybe they can turn their lives around before it's too late. When I see somebody sinning, when I see somebody living the way they should not live, it takes a forgiving spirit on my part to go to that person and try to help them. Try to understand where they are. Put myself on a level with them to lift them up. Help them through the difficult time that they're facing. It takes a forgiving spirit. Not a haughty spirit. I'm better than you. I wouldn't have done what you did. I'm a better man than you. No. It takes a forgiving spirit. Jesus on the cross. What did he say on the cross? They know not what they do. Forgive them. How could he say that? How could he ask the Father to forgive them if he hadn't already forgiven them himself as a man? Not as God, as a man. Of course they needed to repent. No question about that. Of course my brother needs to repent. But I need to approach him in humility with that serving attitude, that serving spirit. Do you see the lesson? This is the kingdom of the Lord. It's not something I look at and say, oh, there's the kingdom. Remember Jesus saying that? You can't point to it and say, that's it. No, it's an attitude. The kingdom is an attitude. It's a heart. It's a point of humility. I've gone on lecturing here. I should let you be involved more. I'm sorry. What would you like to say or question about? But I guess, I'm sorry.
It's worse than this. You know, Washington feels easy when you compare that to what he does later.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. But you know, I'm convinced, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm convinced that even though he went around and washed their feet and said, do you know what I've done? They didn't get it yet. That's the reason they let him be crucified. That's the reason they all forsook him. They still didn't get it. They still didn't know what it meant to trust in the Lord. He always knows what's best. They were still looking at the physical part of it and saying, this can't happen. This can't work. If they crucify him, it's all over. Our hope is gone. They didn't get it. Had they gotten it, they would have stood up there and died with him. You know? Yes.
When would you say they got it?
That's a good question. That's a probing question. And I've played with that for years. But I believe they got it when they started writing the New Testament. James got it. John got it. You read their books and it just permeates every thought they share. They got it.
For sure they showed it on the day of Pentecost.
Well, I think they were still wrestling with it. But yes. Yes.
They said enough to know that they convinced those thousand
yes.
people that they indeed crucified
yes.
the Son of God.
That's right. It just, you know, throughout his ministry, they're just thinking in the physical vein. You know, it's all about a physical kingdom, a physical king. No, my kingdom's not of this world. I'm afraid that we miss the boat too. We grapple with that until we can get our minds wrapped around the spiritual lessons, the spiritual relationships, the spiritual concepts that make up the kingdom. We're of little value in the Lord's kingdom. Of little value.
Want to expound on that statement? We're of little value?
Well, you know, there are things that I know in my own life. I know I've had influence on people for good. And I know that I've grown and I continue to grow. I've never arrived and I never will in this life. I continue to learn. And I know that I can have a positive effect. But it's little. When I really give myself to be an instrument of the Lord, when I really completely trust Him, which I really grope with, but when I do, He works it out for the best. That's what Paul wrote. But do I trust Him that much?
If we trusted Him that much, we would never have a threat.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
No matter what happens on this earth, with jobs, health, or whatever,
mm-hmm.
we would never have a worry. We'd be just like Paul when he was in prison.
Mm-hmm.
He was in prison, but he had no. He wrote letters. You know, they signed in prison. He was not worried about what his outcome was going to be. At least he didn't write like he had a worry.
Right.
So we pray for our job. We pray for our health. Mm-hmm. We pray for all the things that affect us physically on
mm-hmm.
this earth.
Mm-hmm.
God to make them better, take care of them, give us strength to work our way through them. Whereas if we did trust the way that Jesus wants us to trust, then we would not have a single burden. We mm-hmm. wouldn't have to take a single aspirin for headache. We wouldn't have a headache. I used to marvel at my father, who never went with me into a church building. But he told me a number of times he had never had a headache in his life. Never. And this was a man who went through World War II. He worked in the belly of a destroyer where it was hot, smelly, nasty, you name it. But he said he'd never taken an aspirin for headache. And I believe him. Mm-hmm. I never saw him wound up tight enough to have mm-hmm. a headache. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I've taken barrels full of it.
Well, there are things that happen to us over which we have no control that would give us a headache. If you just stop and think about that, you know, he probably never had an accident of any kind, was never hurt anyway. But there are people, let me just give you an example of what I'm thinking about. Anybody know the name Brian Poitras? Used to be at Tingsboro. He's in the congregation in Bowling Green where we are. He fell off a ladder. He's a very tough, big man. He was an ex-Marine. And he fell off a ladder doing a job and really messed up his one leg badly, the ankle. Broke it terribly. And since that time, he's had just tremendous pain. Just tremendous. It finally, I mean, the surgeon told him, said, we just need to repair that. And he said, it's going to be immobile. And Brian said, no way. I said, I'm not going through that. I want to play tennis. I want to play ball. And he said, there's no way I'm going through that. So it went on for years, and it got worse and worse. And it got to the point where he was in such horrific pain all the time. I mean, he wouldn't quit working. He wouldn't quit doing anything. And he was such a horrific pain that he finally went to the doctor and he said, I'm eating painkillers and it's not working. He said, just cut it off. He said, it's of no value to me. And the doctor said, well, let's try something else first. Let's try immobilizing that ankle first. And if it doesn't work, then we can consider the other option. So he had the surgery just here about two months ago. And he said, Jay, I'm pain-free. I'm pain-free. It wasn't that he had been worrying that he had terrific pain. It was just an accident, you know? But this man trusted in the Lord, and he wanted to be useful. He wanted to be doing things to help people. And during his downtime, I'd go on to visit him a lot on my noon hour, and he said, Jay, I'm really down. He said, I don't know what to do with myself. He said, I can't get out. I can't walk. I said, you don't have to walk to be useful. You don't have to be out of the house to be helping somebody. He looked at me and I said, I'm serious. I said, you got a telephone? I said, you can either have people come over and visit you and talk to them, or you can call them on the phone, or you can write them a letter. You can do any number of things to be an encouragement, to be a servant to other people. He said, I never thought about that. But it's changed his life to see that, you know, that servant role he wanted to be a part of, he can still do it even though he can't walk. Now he's getting to the point where he's walking on crutches, and by July he's supposed to be able to put weight on that again. But that ankle is immobile. You know, he can't move it. But he can at least walk on that leg. And he said the best thing is I'm pain free. But, you know, being a servant is so important for all of us. And until we have really arrived at being a servant completely, we don't know how good that is. If you've ever tried to really be a servant to other people, and not just to some, to all, there's a gratitude that comes with that. There's a satisfaction that comes with that that's just unparalleled. But that's the Lord's kingdom. That's what it's all about.
Verse 17 says, if you know these things, blessed are you if you do them.
Exactly.
Not think about them. Do them.
That's right. That's exactly right. So find somebody today. Maybe you think they're your enemy. Serve them some way. Do something for them.
So we get a lot of attention today. Somebody can put it in.
And we're not doing it. Yeah, I know. I want to remind us all, including myself, we're not doing this to get attention. But it does get attention. You know, when we're that kind of people, that's the love that Jesus wants us to have for each other and for all men. Our Father's love for mankind is unconditional. He sends His rain on the just and the unjust alike. He loves them all. Unconditionally. We need to do the same thing. I'm sure I'm over time, but appreciate your time. Thank you.